It's the Lawn and Garden Show with Walter Reeves on 95.5 WSB. Brought to you by Pike Nurseries, your neighborhood garden center, playing in the dirt for more than 50 years. Call now with your lawn and garden questions at 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. And now, here's Walter.
It's 7:06 on a Saturday morning, 73 degrees outside. Rain forecast for today. For a lot of us, that is a great relief because it's been dry, dry, dry for the past 2 weeks. And so finally yesterday to get a pounding rain in my neighborhood anyway. Even though the power was out for 2 hours after that, I was thankful to get some rain. Again, today, the chance of rain around 60% today, 40% tomorrow. Hopefully you get a little rain in your neighborhood because we need it. We don't want to get too dry. 404-872-0750 is the number on Lawn and Garden that you can come in and ask me questions about anything that's on your mind. If you want to be an organic gardener, if you're a first-time gardener, just want to get started the right way, if you have questions about the safety of different insecticides, if you just have any garden question, give me a call, 404-872-0750. Gary is in Decatur and joins us on Lawn and Garden. Hey, Gary, good morning.
Thanks, Walter. I have a lot of friends that like to do a lot of gardening, older guys like myself, and a lot of retired folks that got time. Yep. And when I was growing up on the farm, we lived out in the country. Of course, Stone Mountain is not country anymore. That's all covered up in the city. But anyways, a lot of my friends still like having, in their Salisbury acreage, having a good-sized garden.
Yeah.
And we used to grow herbs. So we used to grow basil and oregano for our spaghetti. And we knew we were sage for making our own homemade sausage out of venison. Sure. We were hunting for deer. We made venison sausage, which is much better than hog sausage. And a few things. So what do you recommend for the Miami area that won't freeze, like some of the hardy herbs, maybe?
Oh, oregano does great. Oregano, I've got a patch across the street from me that my friend Chrissy Calloway planted that when she was 17, I think, 17 or 18, and she's 23 now. So I know that in 5 years, the oregano has stayed in the same spot. It's spread a little bit, so oregano is completely hardy. Rosemary, of course. Rosemary grows for years.
Oh, yeah, rosemary, right. It gets tall.
Basil now. Basil will not grow over the wintertime. It freezes it back. But basil is easy to
put in a pot and take it in, don't you?
Yeah, to put it in a pot, or you just start it from seeds every spring. You've got a huge crop of basil if you start it out right in the spring. Now, what are some of the herbs? Sage. You know, many of the sages will overwinter for a couple of years. They tend to get, I don't know, dried out a little bit or something, and they just decline after a couple of years. But I wouldn't hesitate to grow sage and leave it outdoors and see what happens with it. Oh, what's another good one that we can talk about? Thyme. Thyme is hardy. You can get thyme.
Oh, yeah, thyme, yeah.
Thyme will grow fine in Atlanta. Again, maybe 2 or 3 years, not a real long-lived thing, but I think a couple of years.
I've been growing thyme. Most they say in the reading, one things you're reading about herbs that they like dry. You need to incorporate sand and stuff in the clay dirt around Georgia.
And the time they want to be dry, frankly, is wintertime. Wintertime and soggy soil and herb do not mix very well at all. So try to make that sand, like you said, add sand to the soil so it drains real quickly summer or winter, and that makes the herb, it seems to me, happier than anything else.
So sand, incorporate what, 50% sand or something like that?
Not 50 is a little bit high. I would go 25% sand. I think that'd be fine. Of an inch or so of sand, inch and a half of sand on top of the soil and dig it in real deep down 6 inches or so, that should drain real nicely.
So it doesn't stick as like it used to stick.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Gary, good luck
Walter,
with it.
You're really a treasure, brother. Thanks so much you have.
Good luck with the basil. Good luck with the oregano. I hope you have some good tasting Italian meals in the next couple of weeks, next couple of months, I should say. Rick is in Sharpsburg, Georgia. Hey, Rick, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
All right, Rich. What you got?
I recently retired. I started cutting some grass for my neighbors, and one of my neighbors had a septic tank replaced, and it actually pretty much destroyed her yard. It tore it up and put down winter rye grass.
Sure.
And the winter rye is gone, and it's just a dirt lawn, and she don't want to spend the money on, you know, laying sod.
Okay.
It's just too expensive for her. And I guess her question was, does she need to put down maybe some fescue, or will the winter rye come back? That was a question. Just a pretty much a I'm sorry?
It won't come back. Winter rye won't. But we're early to plant fescue, and we're too late to do Bermuda, Zoysia, centipede seed themselves. So I guess what we do is wait a couple of weeks, Rick, until you'll plant the fescue seed around the middle of September. That should be fine.
Okay, that's what I'm trying to convince her. That's going to be the cheapest route for her, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. Is it a big, big area, Rick, or just small?
Yeah, patches? It is. It's pretty much half of her front yard and pretty much 80% of her backyard. I mean, it looks like a playground.
Wow.
Yeah.
Best thing you can do is help her to prepare the soil. If you can get a tiller in there to till it some and then rake it smooth and put the seed on top of that.
Oh, yeah.
That'll work.
That sounds good. Oh, yeah. I got some work to do.
Yeah, exactly. But at least you got work and something fun to do.
There you go. Well, listen, thank you so much.
It's great talking to you, Rick. Thanks for calling.
Take care.
We'll see you.
Yes, sir. Bye.
404-872-0750 to get you in to take Rick's place right there. Kevin is over in Athens, Georgia, the Classic City. Hey, Kevin. Good morning.
How you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. What's up?
I got a soil question for you. If you're using a super soil, organic super soil, and you're growing a vegetative plant,
yeah,
tomatoes in this case, when it comes time for bloom, of course, the plant needs the potassium and it needs the
phosphorus and nitrogen.
But it doesn't need the nitrogen. The nitrogen is actually detrimental to it. And being that this is a super soil, how do you get rid of the nitrogen but yet maintain the potassium and the phosphorus? Is it a flush the answer and then come back in with the potassium and the phosphorus fertilizer? Or how is that handled?
Clarify for me, Kevin, what do you mean by super soil? When you said
super soil, soils that have all of the, they're slow nutrient over a 6-month period, okay, they end up feeding the plant, and that's the problem when it hits bloom. Before that, you know, the nitrogen's being depleted. Now you have nitrogen in your bloom cycle, and
I don't think that's going to be a problem, frankly, because nitrogen is, yeah, you could get rid of it by flushing, but I don't think the plant itself is going to be that sensitive to the nitrogen, particularly slowly released nitrogen, organic nitrogen like you have in the super soil. I just don't think that's going to be a big deal, Kevin. I think that if as long as you have three nutrients available, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, the plant absorbs them in the ratio that it needs. Now, it's true that if you put some real fast-release nitrogen on the soil, if you fertilize with, say, 10-10-10, just as the plant was blooming, that would not be good because the plant would be sort of forced to absorb more nitrogen than it needs to bloom. And like you say, the blooms might fall off. The plant would suffer as a result. We don't want that. But I think if you have slow-release nitrogen, you're not going to have much problem with excess nutrients in the soil. I don't think that's going to be a big deal.
Right. The nitrogen actually, it would be from organic sources.
Yeah,
instead
compost
of
and kelp and things like that, sure.
So basically just ride it out.
Yeah, I think ride it out. I don't think you're going to have any problem at all. Yeah, that's what I would do.
Okay. Right. I saw some signs on two of them that do have nitrogen. It's either deficiencies or it's nitrogen burn. I did flush those two plants and came back with bloom fertilizer, and they're still headed downhill. Of course, I did use a non-organic super soil on those, so I'm just going to chalk it up to the soil and learn.
You live and you learn, Kevin. And that's one of the great things about gardening. Whatever you grow, and you live and you learn by what does and what doesn't work.
Every day you wake up on the right side of the grass, you have the opportunity to learn.
Thanks for calling, Kevin. We'll talk to you soon. We'll see you.
Yes, thank you. Bye-bye.
404-872, that's Kevin's number, 404-872-0750. Bill, it's over in Emory, Atlanta. Hey, Bill, good morning.
Morning, Walter.
Hi.
My question is this: can you recommend a good pre-emergent weed control product for both lawn and gardens, or one for each? And then what would be the proper time to apply that?
The right time for pre-emergence is going to be around the first week in September, first or second week maybe in September. So just a couple of weeks from now is about time to start pre-emergent cycle of trying to prevent weeds with a pre-emergent chemical. Different products have different labels on them. So, Bill, I don't want to recommend products here and there because I don't know the labels exactly. I'm just going to put it to you, you have to read the label. It'll say can be used in landscapes or can be used in lawn and landscape or should only be used on the lawn. Read the label and find out which one is right for the situation you have.
Is it likely that these products can be picked up at, say, a common retail outlet like Home Depot?
Home Depot, Pike, anybody has pre-emergent, just go in and say, I need pre-emergent. Pike, of course, has a good line of pre-emergent weed, both post-emergent and weed preventer chemicals, too. So Pike would be fine.
Okay.
All right.
Great. Thank you very much.
Time to do it, though. It's getting close. Around the first to the second week in September is the best time in the world to put down a pre-emergent for winter weeds. A lot of the winter weeds start germinating at the end of September. As things are cooling off at the end of September, and the first of October, those winter weeds like chickweed, annual ryegrass, henbit, all of those are germinating around the first of October. And that's why you have to put a pre-emergent out around the first week or two in September to keep those seeds from germinating. Do we have time? No, we don't have time. We'll go in here in a minute. Stan in Jonesboro, stand by. We'll be with you in just a minute. Right now it's 7:17, and we'll be back after this.
It's Scott Slade. Did you know you can listen to Walter Reeves on Saturday mornings on your Amazon Echo or Dot? And me too, weekday mornings. Just say, Alexa, play WSB. And we're on 95.5 WSB, Atlanta's news and talk. Here's Walter.
When I wake up in the morning, love, and the sunlight hurts my eyes, something without warning love.
7:21 on a Saturday morning. A quick weather update brought to you by Finley Roofing. Mix of sun and clouds today. 60% chance of rain. High of 89. Low of 71 today. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy. 40% chance of rain. High of 81. Low of 69. Your full weekend forecast comes up in 10 minutes at 95.5 WSB. Let's go to the phones. Who do we have alerting in here? Stan in Jonesboro. Hey, Stan. Good morning. Hey, Stan.
Good morning, Walter. Walter, I've got my front yard is just in real bad shape, probably soil compaction, topsoil erosion and such. And so I want to basically start over with it.
Okay.
Two large oak trees that you can see that the root zones are definitely defined based on the dry weather. But the biggest problem I have is a lot of moss. And so what to do to try to get rid of the moss before we begin to try to reclaim the front yard?
So the soil compaction is really the thing that you have to get rid of first, because that's what moss loves. Moss loves compacted soil, shade, moisture. And compacted soil tends to hold moisture. And if you have any shade to add to the mix, and that's what moss loves and grass hates. So how can we get your soil uncompacted, Stan?
So we just need to go in and till and try to stay out of the root zones of the tree.
That's the best you can do. Sunlight level is what's going to determine what's successful in the grass that you plant. So how much sunshine will you get underneath the trees, or what do you think the sun's conditions are in your yard?
As I say, they're pretty significant trees, so I would say sun exposure is probably about 50% across the yard.
Okay.
Now the other thought was I had a neighbor who recently planted St. Augustine, and
yeah,
I've had good experience with St. Augustine. That was my desire, was to go back in with St. Augustine.
Okay.
Understanding that it does tolerate some shade, more
some in quote marks, because yeah, it does tolerate more shade than Bermuda grass, for instance, but St. Augustine is not going to go real far underneath your oak trees right now. As a matter of fact, I'm in the midst of planting Mondo grass in amongst the St. Augustine in my front yard, where it's thinning out because of the shade of a crepe myrtle. And it just has gotten too shady underneath the crepe myrtle for the St. Augustine to grow, and Mondo will grow underneath there. So I think the thing to think about, Stan, is not having grass throughout the whole yard. Underneath the densest part of shade, underneath the oak trees, grass, no matter what you have, no matter what kind of grass you choose, is not going to grow where it's shady like that. And so think about how you can make the landscape so as you plant things that love shade, like hostas and ferns and things like that, even mondo grass or monkey grass, either one, which tolerate shade just fine. But the sunny part of the yard, you can probably get either St. Augustine or maybe zoysia would grow well in the sunniest parts of the yard. But that's all I would try to do is the sunny part of the yard gets grass, the rest of the yard where it's shady, it's something else.
So in the areas of the root zone, am I needing to use something that is somewhat shallow rooted, like the mundo?
Yeah, they'd be fine. Mundo grass would be great. It's a very shallow rooted plant, easy to plant, spreads pretty nicely even in shade. Yeah, mundo grass is a great idea.
All right. Well, I certainly appreciate the information.
But again, relieving the compaction as well to get rid of the moss. The moss is there because it found conditions that it liked, and the grass doesn't like. The moss didn't kill the grass. The shade killed the grass. The compacted soil killed the grass. But it wasn't the moss that killed the grass, didn't invade and kill it and move on. It was just that the conditions were better for moss to grow than it was for the centipede to grow. At 7:25, we've got time for Joe and Emery to join us. Hey, Joe, good morning.
Morning.
Hey.
How are you?
Good and fine, Joe.
I bought five of these sort of topiary gardenia bushes.
Oh, yeah.
And they were doing, well, they were doing okay. And all of a sudden, they started dropping the blossoms, you know, as the bud would come out.
Yeah.
And then they started dropping their leaves. And I've noticed that there were, and actually four of them really had a lot of leaf loss. And then two of them have come back really well. Two others are, they're coming back.
Are these in pots or in the ground, Joe?
Well, they're in pots. And then there's a third one that just the whole top died and it's starting to come back from the base.
How big are the pots?
They probably need to be repotted. They could use a bigger pot at this point.
I'm thinking that what might have happened if the pot, was it a dark pot or a white pot or like
terracotta?
Okay.
And a lot of aphids.
Maybe not aphids. What about white flies? White flies really eat up gardenias. You may have had a combination of a couple of things. One, in a pot, without a large pot, I think the gardenia would suffer from occasionally being dried out a little bit more than it should be during the summertime. If it were a dark plastic pot, I would have said the soil got too hot from being exposed to the sun, perhaps. But the conditions in a pot are not great for gardenias. They like to be down in the ground where the roots can stay reasonably cool during the summertime. So I can sort of understand just from the condition in the pot, the gardenias might fail. And the white flies, if you got white flies too, then that's just sucking sap and weakening the plant all by itself too. So the easiest thing to use to control white flies in a potted plant or in the ground, either one, is one of the systemic granules. Pike, for instance, sells one called Bonide Systemic Granules, and there's another one that Pike sells called Bonide Houseplant Systemic Granules. And you could use either one of those on a potted plant, and that'll get rid of the white flies pretty quickly and pretty easily. And then, as quick as you can, get them in the ground, do the best you can in preparing the soil before you plant them. Try to get those gardenia root systems happy, 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 so maybe they'll recover from the damage they've had during the summertime in those pots. But that's what you need to do, is control white flies and then get the roots in a better condition than they are right now. It's 7:28. We'll be back to more Lawn and Garden after news.
It's the Lawn and Garden Show with Walter Reeves on 95.5 WSB. Brought to you by Pike Nurseries, your neighborhood garden center, playing in the dirt for more than 50 years. Call now with your lawn and garden questions at 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. And now, here's Walter.
It's 7:35 on a Saturday morning, 73.2 degrees outside. This is Lawn and Garden. I'm Walter Reeves, the Georgia Gardener, here to help you be more successful, dude. Whatever you want to do in your landscape or whatever you don't want to do, either way, is okay with me. 404-872-0750 gets you in this morning. Mike in McDonough, Georgia, joins us. Hey, Mike, good morning.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing all right, Mike. What's up?
I know with regular azaleas, you should prune them after they bloom in the spring.
Yeah.
But I was curious with encore azaleas or shrubs that bloom multiple times, what's the rules of them? I look a little straggly.
Same deal. I think your best time to prune is after that spring flush comes out. And then you have plenty of time then for the summer, the sporadic summer stuff. And then the things cool off in the fall. You get another big flush on the encores too. So I think the best time to do it is after the spring bloom time.
Okay, like I said, they're kind of getting straggly, and I didn't know. Yeah. I figured I might lose some of the fall blooms if I pruned them now.
Yeah, yeah, you
think will. I might lose some of the spring blooms as well.
Well, let me think. If I were faced with scraggly encores right now, what would I do? I think a little hand pruning is about all you can do right now, and maybe wait till after the fall flowering has happened. That'll be in September up until late September, and then in October, do some hand pruning and remove the tallest thing. If you want to sort of make it more compact, remove some of the tallest limbs. Look on the tips of the limbs too, though, Mike, and you can see the little flower buds that'll be there for next spring's flowering. And so if you see a tip that has a little swollen bud on the end, you can leave it alone, and the tips that don't have the swollen buds, then they can just be taken away.
All right.
Right.
I appreciate it.
Good talking to you. Thanks for calling, Mike. We've got Bill in Marietta is with us. Hey, Bill, good morning.
Good morning, Walter. How are you, sir?
I'm well, Bill. What's going on?
Cleaning out the shed and found a package of 0460 fertilizer that's got some age on it. What can we use that, or do we have to dispose of it, or what?
One of my childhood chores, Bill, was my dad was not too good, I guess, about keeping his fertilizer dry. And as you know, when you get fertilizer wet, it clumps up and hardens, and you've got a great big white lump of fertilizer. And so we would take a big sheet of tin and put it in the driveway, and he would drive his car over the sheet of tin. And my job was to put lumps of fertilizer underneath the tire of the car, so it'd roll over it. Crush it down, sweep it out of the way, put another lump in there, and it'd crush that one down too. And so that's how we crushed our fertilizer that had gotten lumpy from being wet. You can do the same. You can get a hammer and get that lumpy white triple superphosphate that you have and smash it up real good and just scatter it in the landscape.
Very good. What is the 0460? What is the best application for that on shrubbery plants, lawn, or what, sir?
To be truthful, we don't suffer usually from much of a shortage of phosphorus in our soils. So just sort of a light general spreading out over everything is all I would try to do. There's no any particular plant that needs more phosphorus than another. I think I would just spread it lightly over everything.
Over everything.
Yeah.
All right. Very good. Thanks for your help this morning, Walter. Have a great weekend.
Be glad you're not 10 years old in 1960 crushing fertilizer.
All you want for Christmas is a big hammer, right, brother?
Good. Well said, Bill. Thanks for calling.
Yes, sir. Enjoy your weekend. Bye-bye.
There are a lot of things that I'm really glad I never have to do again. Betty is in Tucker for the St. Augustine grass. Hey, Betty, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
Yes, I have apparently chinch bugs in two places in my real pretty St. Augustine lawn.
Why do you think
that? And I wondered if I could put that triazide over all my grass.
Why do you think you have chinch bugs?
Well, it's died in two places, and the rest of the lawn is real pretty.
My neighbor Gus, the other St. Augustine lawn owner, myself, my friend Gus, my friend Kim, all have St. Augustine lawns in our neighborhood. And so Gus called me three nights ago, and he said, Walter, I'm out in my front yard, and there's irregular brown patches in my lawn look like chinch bugs where I had them last year, and we killed them with insecticide. And I thought to myself, yeah, man, I wish I had sprayed the insecticide a couple of weeks ago. It would have kept this from happening to you and my lawn, too. So, yes, Betty, go out and spray the whole lawn. Spray the whole lawn with one of the lawn insecticides. Of course, BioAdvance makes one. Spectracide makes one, the triazicide. I'm sure there's another one in there, too.
I have bought some triazide. Is that okay?
That'd work fine.
Okay. But should I put it out every fall? I mean, say in August or something?
I think a
to
better,
keep from getting chinch bugs?
A better time, I think, would be in mid-June to early July.
That's oh,
when
okay.
That's when they're real little. They haven't quite gotten big enough to hurt the grass yet. But there are a lot of little ones then, and they're more susceptible to the insecticide in June, July than they are right now in August, in late August.
I see. Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, Betty. Thanks for calling. Good luck.
Thank you.
If you have St. Augustine grass, look for these irregular brown patches of dead grass. And that's the best way to describe it, irregular dead brown. You might think initially, well, what's this water that got dry in that spot? But why would it be in the middle of the lawn, in Gus's case, in a mine on the edge of the lawn? Why is it dry in that one place? It's probably St. Augustine chinch bugs. If you want to diagnose chinch bugs pretty easily, you can do what we did last year, and that is to take a vacuum cleaner with a nozzle and put an old sock over the end of the nozzle and then went out there and sucked the grass clippings and the dirt and the everything that we could find around an area where we thought there might be chinch bugs, and then simply took the black sock and spread it out. And sure enough, there were 10, 15, 100 maybe little black and white bugs, little black and white. They moved pretty quickly, too. And those were chinch bugs. The blades of the grass will have spots, brown spots, where they feed on the blades of the grass. And if you let them grow unchecked, then they will eat up a St. Augustine lawn, and you'll be very sad to see it that way. But like Betty, you get it early. Like Gus, you get it early, get the insecticide out there, and hopefully get the chinch bugs under control. Now, every year I should be spraying, and this year I simply just forgot. Maybe I thought I was lucky or something. I was not lucky. Gus is not lucky. We have chinch bugs in our lawns. At 7:41, we got Doris in Berkeley Lake. Doris, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, Doris.
Hi. I have a half a dozen yews that I planted along the side of the house a year ago, and half of them are nice, lush green, and the other half are turning a little yellowish.
Hmm.
And I've checked for root rot. I don't think it's root rot. They all got well watered in last year, and I'm not sure what to check for next.
So these are yew plants, you said?
Yes.
Okay. Generally speaking, if this is a real Taxus, is this the first Latin name is Taxus, T-A-X-U-S, Taxus?
I don't remember. It's the kind that get about 4 feet high, maybe 4.5 feet high.
Yeah. Generally speaking, we don't have a lot of yews, true yews, growing in Atlanta because it gets too hot in the summer and a little bit too cold. But not cold is not the bad thing. It's usually heat that limits their growth here. So I'm wondering if you have the real true yew plant, yew shrub, like they grow in Cincinnati and Kentucky and Tennessee and places like that. It was fine up there. In Atlanta, it doesn't seem to do very well at all. So I'm wondering, first of all, if we have the right plant identified. And I can't go much further than that until I'm sure you have Taxus. Because if you do, I'm going to say, well, it's the wrong plant in the wrong place.
Okay.
So do you have a label? Do you have a label? Do you have a receipt? Do you have any way to find out what you have?
I do somewhere else. I do have a receipt that I can go back and check and see.
If you find the receipt, you know, see what it says, what the Latin name or some identifying thing on the receipt, Doris, then you can call me back or email me either one and say, I do have Taxus, or no, I don't. I have something else that looks like Taxus, but it's not Taxus. Then we can diagnose what you got. Why they're declining.
Okay.
All right.
I could do that. Thank you.
Look forward to seeing you soon. We'll find out what it is. That's one of the things that is most important when you're diagnosing problems with a plant. What is the plant exactly? Taxus might be something else. There's another plant called false Taxus, cephalotaxus. It grows very nicely in Georgia, but it doesn't get 4.5 feet high very readily. So that's why I'm questioning what plant exactly we were talking about just then. Let's see here. We've got Heather in Marietta. Hey, Heather, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, what's up?
I bought a grape about 3 years ago. It's supposed to be a radiance grape, seedless, sort of a pinky purpley flesh.
Yeah, yeah.
And first year, it didn't really do a lot. I was expecting that. Second year, you know, it began to creep. And then this year, it really leapt, and it flowered profusely.
Awesome.
The berries are turquoise, and they're small, and they are creamy colored to begin with, turning to a turquoise color.
Yeah.
Nothing at all that looks in any way edible.
Like radiance, like you wanted on there.
I mean, this doesn't, it has a grape-like leaf. They're smaller. But I have never seen anything like this.
Let's go back and think. Is this a possibility of being a grafted grape?
I would guess so.
If it is a grafted grape, is it possible that the understock has taken over the top? In other words, the radiance part of the plant that's grafted to something else has died, and then the understock, the one that was grafted to, that's usually not a very good grape, but just a very vigorous root system. Is it possible? I'm not saying this is what happened, but I'm just thinking of all the possibilities, Heather. If it's possible,
I had been curious about that. I just wasn't sure if possibly there was some sort of grape infection or fungus that I had not yet located.
Unless you tell me, that they're dried up and moldy and spots all over the fruit or something like that. Now, that's sure, there are plenty of grape fungi out there. But because the fruit just does not look at all like radiance, I want you to go out and look at where these, where the vine originates from. If it originates right from the ground, see if you can see a graft union. It's usually a little swollen knot on the base of the grape plant. And above that swollen knot, that should be where your radiance grape is growing. And if you see that, no, all the growth seems to be coming from underneath the knot, underneath, close to the ground, ground level, I'm suspecting that it is the understock that's taken off and taken over the top of the plant.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
I may not be right. I may not be right, Heather. And so if you think I'm wrong, take pictures, call me back, give me some idea of what you think is going on for real, and we'll talk more about it. But that's what I guess is going on. One more question, Heather, and I don't want you to name names here, but did you buy the grape online or from a big box store, from a nursery, or where did you get it originally?
Local nursery.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nurseries are better at labeling things correctly, but online and from, like, well, I'm not going to say from Amazon, but online places, sometimes you get plants that are not right, like correctly labeled, and big box stores sometimes have problems with labeling too. So just thinking, is it a possibility it just wasn't that great to begin with? Was it not?
No, this was a completely reputable, nursery.
Good.
Not one of the online ones. I've done that before.
Okay.
I made that mistake before.
All right, we understand. All right. Well, let's find out what you have. Heather, go out and do some examinations. We'll do a little further investigation. If you want to call back or email me, either one. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for calling. It's 7:48. We'll be back after this.
It's Scott Slade, host of Atlanta's Morning News on 95.5 WSB. The news and traffic teams will be here first thing Monday morning to help you get to work on time and informed. Now back to Walter Reeves and his lawn and garden expertise on 95.5 WSB, Atlanta's News and Talk.
Great music on a Saturday morning, brought to you courtesy of Jason Byers, the best garden music in the on the planet.
I don't know why I love it like I do.
Great questions for a Saturday morning. What's the weather going to be like? We have a quick weather update brought to you by Finley Roofing. Mix of sun and clouds today, 60% chance of rain, high of 89, low of 71. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, 40% chance of rain, high of 81, low of 69. Your full weekend forecast comes up in 10 minutes on 95.5 WSB. And I hope Heather in Marietta is still listening, because we think we have an answer. And we, who's we? My friend Shannon Pabel has my private line and can text me answers sometimes when she hears a question on the radio. She'll text me her take on the situation. And Shannon, I think, is exactly right. Shannon said, I bet she has porcelain berry vine. Porcelain berry is a vine that's very much like a grapevine. The leaves look almost exactly like a grapevine. But porcelain berry is a wildly invasive vine. It has pretty blue porcelain color. Oh, gosh, those berries are pretty. Birds love them. Birds spread the porcelain vine everywhere in my landscape and in my neighborhood. And if Heather has a porcelain vine, that would that would explain exactly why her Radiance grape is not doing very well. It could be well be that the Radiance grape actually died. Porcelain vine could have been planted underneath her arbor by a bird, and she might very well have porcelain berry instead of a Radiance grape at all. If she has porcelain berry, good luck with that, because she needs to pull it out quick. It will be everywhere before she knows it. Curtis is in Marietta and joins us on Lawn and Garden. Hey, Curtis, good morning.
Good morning, Walter.
Hey, Curtis.
Hey, I got two cherry trees that I stuck in the ground 3 years ago, and they're different types. One has a full football-size leaf, and the other one is a skinny football size. Anyway, especially the one with the bigger football size is dropping them all now, and I wonder if that's kind of normal or if there's anything wrong with it. I bought them at one of your sponsors, so yeah, I assume that's not the issue. Yeah. Is this about the right time for cherry trees to start dropping leaves?
No, it's
turning
not.
Yellow?
No, it's not. And what they very likely have, cherries have a disease, pretty common. It's not everywhere in Atlanta, but I see it in various spots around Atlanta. It's called cherry leaf spot because the first sign of the disease is the leaves will turn yellow with little brown spots, or maybe black spots, little black spots all over the leaves. And once they have the black spots and yellow leaves, down they come. The whole tree defoliates within about a week, it seems like.
Oi.
So, yeah, oi is right. And that's what I would guess, Curtis, is going on with yours, is it has cherry leaf spot. And there's two things you can do. And one thing you can do right now, and that is to rake all those leaves out and replace the leaves with fresh mulch or whatever is underneath the tree, freshen it up real good so you don't have the same infective tissue underneath the tree to infect them next year.
Okay.
Next spring, late spring really, in late May, you can spray, if you can, as much of the tree as you can reach with a sprayer using one of the garden insecticides like Daconil, Captan, either one of those work fine. And spray the tree leaves with a fungicide to prevent the leaf spot from starting. But it starts in late June, be about when the fungus is really getting a hold on the leaves. So rake the leaves out first. That's what you do now. And then next year, consider spraying with the fungicide.
I see. You know, I got some Japanese anises around them because I was building a screen against my neighbor.
Yeah.
Will that impact those?
No, should not.
Okay.
Should not at all.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you, partner.
All right, it's great talking to you, Curtis. Good luck with it. It's 7:57 at News Talk WSB. We'll be back after news.